Hi, welcome to our November 15th study of the Scriptures and the article Born and Raised, a 2021 article from February 28th of that year. And in welcoming you, I'd like to say the time is 20:09 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again to do the study, and I'm very excited. Thrilling excitement such as I only experienced in years past during the writing of my articles, 18 of which are written, including the one we're studying now. But they were so exciting to me, the ones from the time of Joseph and even the Green article, but Joseph and On, that article, which is also called The Redemption of the Phoenix, and all of these subsequent articles, Moses, The Crucible of Credible Creed, there were a very significant number of them, all of which contained details of the same chronology that we are discussing, the genealogical chronology, which we believe is the true chronology, and it's also called the BG, Blessed Genealogy. Before we launch into that, I want to talk about why I'm excited. I'm excited because I've been learning by trying to understand the time of King Saul and Samuel, and to understand the chronology, I've been learning new things, which I didn't think it was possible to know, but I'm trying to get a more accurate understanding of the chronology, and I don't know if it's even possible, but from Acts 13:21, they demanded a king, it says, but it says he gave them judges in the previous verse until Samuel the prophet, Acts 13:20, and then Acts 13:21. But from then on, they demanded a king, and God gave them Saul, son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. But does it say that Saul was king for 40 years? No, it doesn't. That is the most significant thing that I've discovered. Even though I've read this many times, or at least I committed it to my memory a long time ago, and I thought that I knew what it said, but it doesn't say Saul was king for 40 years. And then when we look at Josephus, if we do look at Josephus, which we will, but first of all, I want to go back to where we were here. But I want to look at Josephus now before we come back to our scriptures. Josephus, in his work, he says that after the death of Eli, Samuel governed 12 years, and 18 years together with Saul the king, which is interesting because that 18 years, if we take that to be after the 22 years of the beginning of Saul's kingship, 22 years plus 18 is 40, and of course Saul had the royal rule ripped off of him by Samuel, so these 18 years could have been the last 18, except for the final two, of Saul's rulership, at which point Samuel died. And then in another part, place here, in chapter 10, for example, if we look for the number of 20 years, it says here that Saul retained the government. This is in Josephus Antiquities 10, 8 and 4, I think. 10, 8 and 4, yeah. 10, book 10, chapter 8, section 4. That Saul retained the kingship 20 years. So 22 years is pretty consistent with that. With the following 18 being the time when Samuel, we might say, was judging while Saul was king and had had the royal rule ripped off of him, and then we know that Samuel died, and we know that from another place, if we look down in this same, this is Josephus Antiquities, book 6, chapter 13, I believe, section 6, yeah. Book 6, chapter 13, it's book 6. If we look for years, or just for 18 years is what we want to look for here, because I know that's what we're looking for. 18 years together with Saul, Eli judged. It doesn't say that when Saul was actually officially ruling in that verse, but it says Eli 12 years as high priest, presiding, judging, in other words, and then 18 years together with Saul. But the next time we see Saul had reigned 18 years, it says, which that's the only discrepancy here, that unless we view that as the years when he didn't really rule, while Samuel was alive, and after Samuel's death, 2 years. So there's 2 years of interregnum after 18 and 22 makes 40, or 22 of Saul, 18 of Samuel, and then 2 years of interregnum makes 42 years. It's possible to add it up that way. Yeah, it's exciting to me that we can actually make sense out of it, because the book of Acts mentions the period of 40 years and doesn't say that Saul was ruling for 40 years. And we have Josephus saying Saul only ruled for 20 years. So, but it seems like it's possible there was a 40-year period. It's certainly also because Saul had a son who was 40 years old after Saul died. And he, apparently that son, Ish-bosheth, hadn't even been born yet when Saul began to rule. The insights can be gained over time. And I'm thrilled about that. That's why I'm excited. The book of Jasher shows that Abraham was 65 years old, now that we've used 7 minutes, when Chedorlaomer conquered Elam, which makes the date of that conquest BCE 2141, and the date of Genesis 14:4 BCE 2146, from Jasher, again, when Abraham was 60 years old. The rebellion of Chedorlaomer against Amraphel, king of Shinar, after the events of Genesis 14, in the very year of Abraham's life that coincides with the commencement of the kingdom of Assyria, 2141. The coincidence was just happened that these things coincided after we had already determined the kingdom of Assyria in the genealogy separately. We hadn't even looked at Abraham at that point, or the book of Jasher, combined with the personage of Gudea. Okay. We also know, not only does Abraham's life correspond with the date we had for Assyria, but this person, Gudea, conquers Elam in his 6th year, which was something we just, I don't know how I stumbled on that, but Gudea, there's a record from Gudea that says his 6th year he conquered Elam. And the strong identifying character of both these people with Ninus, the founder of the Assyrian Empire, both of those things, the fact that Genesis 14 from the book of Jasher also corresponds to this 6th year after that attack by Chedorlaomer, from the book of Jasher, was also when he conquered Elam, was 6 years, 5 years after that, perfectly aligns with knowing what we have for the dating of Abraham's life, his birth date, knowing that, and knowing how we determine the year when these things happen, it aligned perfectly with 2141. But also the fact that Gudea conquered Elam in his 6th year, which coincided with the 6th year after Chedorlaomer went on attack. It was perfect alignment. And these, both of these things are hard to ignore. Sir Walter Raleigh seems to say Chedorlaomer was Ninus also. That's another thing. Walter Raleigh said, and I didn't know this at all until I wrote this. I hadn't learned it earlier. I discovered that Chedorlaomer was, I believed, seemed to be the same person as Ninus and as Gudea. Same person because of the timing in the chronology. The timing, the chronology proved it. Too hot. Gotta turn this off. Heater's too hot. So I'd already identified Ketterleomer as Ninus and as Gudea before I discovered Walter Raleigh also thought the same. And then I added that note there, but when I wrote this, I knew. But I had already come across it in my own study, just through my own article writing, or my own research is what it was, from Genesis 14. I mean, just by stumbling onto it, though. From Genesis 14 now, it was Chedorlaomer who, with Amraphel and two other kings, was victorious in a battle against five other kings. That's from Genesis 14. So to count that as his year one seems how appropriate for Chedorlaomer. We don't know what his real year one was, but we have this battle. We could count that as year one for him, who rebelled against his lord Amraphel only 5 years later and took Elam. That's from the book of Jasher. The coincidence that Gudea took Elam in his own year six seems too great to overlook, considering the fact that both are dated to the same time. But more than that, that Nana was a moon god. Note the similarity to the name Ninus here. Nana was a moon god, Sin, also called Sin, worshipped by Gudea. Gudea's wife was called Ninala. His son was Ur-Nin-Girsu. Nin was a word for lady, lord, firstborn son. Nin meant firstborn son, and that Ninus, the founder of Assyria, was said to be, quote-unquote, the son of Belus. So the fact that Nin meant son also has a role here to play. Belus ruled 55 years and is identified as an Akkadian king, Sargon I, who overthrew the Arabians to become founder of the dynasty of Akkad, and who... Ninus, that is, conquered. Ninus was the founder of Assyria, who conquered the Akkadians to found the Assyrian dynasty. Mr. Russell writes, it is well known that the ancient chronographers were nearly unanimous in their opinion that Abraham was a contemporary of the son of Belus, quote-unquote son of Belus. Thus, Chedorlaomer as the servant of Amraphel, although the name Amraphel doesn't mean anything, particularly to us, seems to imply that Gudea was the quote-unquote prince of Sharkalishari, the last king called Nimrod. All the kings were called Nimrod for the dynasty of that location, that place around where Nimrod had earlier ruled, of the dynasty of Akkad. The last king of that dynasty of Akkad was Sharkalishari. The identity, okay, that doesn't mean it had to have been Sharkalishari. Perhaps there could have been some more kings of which we don't have any reason to believe, but after the king against whom Chedorlaomer rebelled, there may have been some more kings of less consequence. So we don't know if it was Sharkalishari. The name doesn't line up with the name Amraphel. Yet, as far as we know, we haven't figured out the language similarities or correspondences. But the identity of Sargon I with Belus is also consistent with Mr. Jackson's comment, the great chronologer, Mr. Jackson, that Belus was succeeded by four of his descendants. There were indeed four descendants who ruled before the end of that dynasty, before this quote-unquote son, Ninus, took power. Now, of course, when we look at the dynasty of Akkad, it ends, and so it doesn't continue with Ninus, because Ninus overthrew the dynasty. There's just an ending of that dynasty. We don't know from the historical records that Ninus took power, except from the records that say that. I mean, we don't know from the records of the actual dynasty of Akkad. We know from the historical records that Ninus took power at some point. These records prove, is consistent with Mr. Jackson's comment. The records that talk about Ninus taking power prove that Abraham lived in the times of the Akkadian kings Naram Sin and Sharkali Shari, because they also say that Abraham was a contemporary of this son of Belus, who was called Ninus. That would prove that Abraham lived in the times of the Akkadian kings Naram Sin and Sharkali Shari, and there were a couple more kings also in that dynasty who were the sons of, or the descendants, or the follower, the successors of Sargon I, and also of their successor Ninus, their successor, the successor of the dynasty of Akkad, who was called Ninus or Gudea. So Abraham lived during the time of these people, also during the time of Chedorlaomer, who was the same person, just another name for Gudea or Ninus. The time of Sargon I is determined independently. Okay, we can also determine the time of Sargon I independently using the 1903 years of astronomical records obtained by the servant of Alexander the Great at Babylon. They're consecutive years of records. And Alexander the Great obtained these at Babylon in the year BCE 330. His servant gave them to Alexander after having obtained them, and thus we have the year BCE 2233, 1903 plus 330 is 2233, as the starting date of these important astronomical records, a year corresponding closely to the reign of Sargon I's little children. Even with Sargon I's year 1, dated as BCE 2282 to 2281, roughly, and within the range of dates used by us in previous articles for Sargon year 1, which were between the years BCE 2302 to 2268 for Sargon year 1, because we've given some different estimates, his years of reign, even if only 50, starting from 2282 or 2281, puts his last year in BCE 2231, or 2 years after that date, BCE 2233, which we calculated as the year of the beginning of those astronomical records, which are called the Observations of Bel. Okay, excuse me. Excuse me. It cannot be stressed too much how well the chronology of Abraham aligns with what is known about the secular kings of Akkad, also with dates of meteorite showers. That's talked about in our other article. At some point, there's a reference to these meteorite showers, which was fascinating because it proved that what happened at Sodom can be explained by the meteorite showers. But only if we date Abraham at that particular time. The Ark of Urartu, it says. Meteorite showers. Dates of meteorite showers. Footnote 16 and footnote 12. Footnote 16 is the current paragraph 11.9.8 at C above. Footnote 12 is the Ark of Urartu. Chapter 3, paragraph 10. Well, I have a feeling these meteorite showers. What you can do is just look up, do a Google search for the site, S-I-T-E, /willofjehovah.com, and then space, and write meteorite showers, and you'll find it in one of the articles. That's what I'm going to do later. This confirms our dating of Joseph as BCE 1923, Egypt, because, of course, the date of Joseph is closely connected to the date of Abraham. Joseph was the son of Jacob, who was the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. But even more than this, it offers a starting date for the calculation back to the deluge of Noah, because we know Abraham's date. Using the Septuagint patriarchal generations, Noah was born in BCE 3882, while the deluge was BCE 3282. The date of Noah is confirmed by the Bronze Age dating, that is, of early metalworking after the deluge. That's dated. The Bronze Age has been given dates around that time, very close to that time, when metalworking began after the deluge. From the deluge, the Septuagint generations are again used to calculate dates to the creation of Adam. Adam's creation, or year one, is BCE 5550, calculated back from 3882 to 5550, year one of Adam. And that number, 5550, is absolutely remarkable because it's 7 1/7 times 777. That's what that number equals. And there are also 72 times 77 years from Adam to the birth of Jesus. Aren't all those things absolutely incredible and remarkable, and yet true can be? It's astounding. Okay, now, that's all for the study of born and raised for today. That was a lot of information, and all of it was so earth-shattering at the same time that it's just, it was a lot. For both reasons, from our proverb for today, little ones, Ecclesiastes 4:6, better is a handful of rest than a double handful of hard work and striving after the wind. Now, a double handful of hard work, that implies, is very good. A double handful of hard work is good, but it's better to have a handful of rest than a double handful of hard work. That's what it's saying. Because the hard work, in the grand scheme of things, is always going to be striving after wind. It's never going to quite amount to what we think it is. That's the problem with the struggles that we have. We're out of time. 2 Corinthians 12:10 says, therefore I take pleasure in weaknesses, in insults, in cases of need, in persecutions, and difficulties for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am powerful. Let's keep that in mind. We haven't even read Samuel yet. Samuel, 1 Samuel 15. I think this is all we're going to be able to do today, maybe, is this study of Samuel. Then Samuel said to Saul, it was I. This is after the battle against the Philistines that was talked about in the previous chapter, when Jonathan was a big hero. Then Samuel said to Saul, right? So either that battle when the son of Saul, Jonathan, was a hero, occurred later in Saul's reign, or else Saul was old when he began to reign. And so, you know, we can certainly see it. But or else Jonathan was born when Saul was very young, and Jonathan was very young at the time also. It seems possible that it was later in Saul's reign. So Saul was about 40 or older when that battle happened, with Jonathan, his son, being such a warrior. Then Samuel said to Saul, it was I whom Jehovah sent to anoint you as king over his people Israel, Samuel said. And now listen to the voice of the words of Jehovah. This is what Jehovah of armies has said. I must call to account what Amalek did to Israel when he set himself against him in the way while he was coming up out of Egypt. Now go, and you must strike down Amalek and devote him to destruction with all that he has. And you must not have compassion upon him, and you must put them to death, man as well as woman, child as well as suckling, bull as well as sheep, camel as well as ass. Accordingly, Saul summoned the people and took the count of them in Telaim, 200,000 men on foot and 10,000 men of Judah. Now they had a lot more men, possibly because they captured all the weapons of the Philistines in the prior battle, and so they had a lot more weapons. That's one possible explanation for why there were so many more men now. And Saul proceeded to come as far as the city of Amalek and to lie in ambush by the torrent valley. Meanwhile, Saul said to the Kenites, go, depart, Go down from the midst of the Amalekites, that I may not sweep you away with them. As for you, you exercised loving kindness with all the sons of Israel at the time of their coming up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from the midst of Amalek. After that, Saul went striking down Amalek from Havilah as far as Shur, which is in front of Egypt. And he got to catch Agag, the king of Amalek, alive, and all the other people he devoted to destruction with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people had compassion upon Agag, and upon the best of the flock and the herd and the fat ones, and upon the rams, and upon all that was good. And they did not wish to devote them to destruction. As for all the goods that were despicable and rejected, these they devoted to destruction. The word of Jehovah now came to Samuel, saying, I do regret that I have caused Saul to reign as king, because he has turned back from following me, and my words he has not carried out. And it was distressing to Samuel, and he kept crying out to Jehovah all night long. Then Samuel got up early to meet Saul in the morning. But report was made to Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and look, he was erecting a monument for himself. And he then turned around and went across and descended to Gilgal. At length Samuel came to Saul, and Saul began to say to him, Blessed are you of Jehovah. I have carried out the word of Jehovah. But Samuel said, Then what does this sound of the flock in my ears mean, and the sound of the herd that I'm hearing? To this Saul said, From the Amalekites they have brought them, because the people had compassion upon the best of the flock and of the herd, for the purpose of sacrificing to Jehovah your God. But what was left over we have devoted to destruction. At this Samuel said to Saul, Stop, and I will tell you what Jehovah spoke to me last night. So he said to him, Speak. And Samuel went on to say, Was it not when you were little in your own eyes that you were head of the tribes of Israel, and Jehovah proceeded to anoint you as king over Israel? Later Jehovah sent you on a mission and said, Go, and you must devote the sinners, the Amalekites, to destruction, and you must fight against them until you will have exterminated them. So why is it you did not obey the voice of Jehovah, but went darting greedily at the spoil, and doing what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah? However, Saul said to Samuel, But I have obeyed the voice of Jehovah, in that I went on the mission on which Jehovah had sent me, and I brought Agag, the king of Amalek. But Amalek I have devoted to destruction. And the people went taking from the spoil sheep and cattle, the choicest of them, as something devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to Jehovah your God in Gilgal. In turn Samuel said, Does Jehovah have as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of Jehovah? Look, to obey is better than a sacrifice, to pay attention than the fat of rams. For rebelliousness is the same as the sin of divination, and pushing ahead presumptuously the same as using uncanny power and teraphim. Since you have rejected the word of Jehovah, he accordingly rejects you from being king. Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have overstepped the order of Jehovah and your words, because I feared the people and so obeyed their voice. And now please pardon my sin and return with me, that I may prostrate myself to Jehovah. But Samuel said to Saul, I shall not return with you, for you have rejected the word of Jehovah, and Jehovah rejects you from continuing as king over Israel. As Samuel was turning about to go, he immediately grabbed hold of the skirt of his sleeveless coat, but it ripped away. At this, Samuel said to him, Jehovah has ripped away the royal rule of Israel from off you today, and he will certainly give it to a fellow man of yours who is better than you. And besides, the excellency of Israel will not prove false, and he will not feel regrets, for he is not an earthling man, so as to feel regrets. At this he said, I have sinned. Now honor me, please. please in front of the older men of my people and in front of Israel, and return with me, and I shall certainly prostrate myself to Jehovah your God." So Samuel returned behind Saul, and Saul proceeded to prostrate himself to Jehovah. After that, Samuel said, "Bring Agag, the king of Amalek, near to me." Then Agag went to him reluctantly, and Agag began to say to himself, "Truly the bitter experience of death has departed." However, Samuel said, "Just as your sword has bereaved women of children, in that way your mother will be most bereaved of children among women." With that, Samuel went hacking Agag to pieces before Jehovah in Gilgal. Samuel now went his way to Ramah, and Saul, for his part, went up to his own house at Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death, because Samuel had gone into mourning for Saul. As for Jehovah, he regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. So the royal rule, that's the end of 1 Samuel 15, the royal rule was ripped away from Saul on this occasion. And if we say that that was 22 years after Saul began to rule, then that would be the year 1078 in the genealogy, which is exactly the time when David was 10 years old. And as we're going to see, Saul anoints David subsequent to this event, which could have happened when David was still either 10 years old or up to maybe the age of 15 years old, perhaps, or some low teens age as a young teenager, because David, we know, slew Goliath and became, at the time when he was not even of the age to be fighting in the army, at least it appears that's the case, that he wasn't even old enough to be 20 years old yet to be part of the army, but he slew Goliath at that point. We're out of time, my goodness. But that's coming up in the chapters that we're going to see tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. Be the good Lord willing, I'm a little bit disappointed we didn't get to see too many more things here. But the commentary, interesting here, I'd like to show if we have any time here. Where is it? Is that it? Or is this it? Let's see. Here it is. There's the Expository Bible's commentary for 1 Samuel 15, which you could read. Expositor's Bible commentary is interesting because it says the second portion of God's indictment against Saul is what we just read. But we're out of time. But it's an interesting comment that's found there. And this is, once again, November 15th, 2023. I'm still thrilled to have done the study, even though we weren't able to get through Jeremiah or what I would have liked to have read, which was Colossians chapter 1. So you can look at that. And Jeremiah 19, I believe it was what we were going to do. Yeah. So I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And this is Crow, my beloved chronograph, and Cassie, my beloved digital watch, on my behalf saying bye for now.